Hey gang, it's Ray Gunn with another edition of the Arcade Archives. Relax and enjoy the show.
So, a creature for my amusement. Prepare for battle.
The Arcade Archives.
April 5th, 1985. Why do I remember this date so vividly? Well, when something like this happens in your life, something really big, you never forget it. And that was the day I bought my first arcade game. Sure, I had had my Atari 2600 for a few years at that point. And, of course, I had my Atari 800 computer. And there was tons of other systems out that I played. The ColecoVision, the Vectrex, the Intellivision, Odyssey 2. But there was something about having a full-size arcade game. I had always wanted one. But this one was different from the rest. This was one that I had a fascination with from the moment that I heard it was coming out. That was Space Ace. Now, on today's show, we're going to talk about Space Ace in great extent. The history of what I have of the game, the history of the game itself, who developed it, when it came out, the turmoil that the industry was in at the time that the game was released, all of its variants after the actual release had happened, and we'll talk also about the short-lived one-season cartoon that was on Saturday Supercade. I was into video games right from the beginning. I remember seeing my first Pong machine in 1973, and soon after that, home units were popping up all over the place, and friends would invite me over to their house to play, you know, their versions of Pong, whether it be from Coleco or Atari or any of the other companies. And I was hooked. It was time for me to have my own system. Eventually, I ended up with an Atari 2600. It didn't stop there, though. I remember the first time I actually went into an arcade. That was in 1977. We had just moved into our new home, and my dad needed to go to this new place called the Mall to pick up something at Sears. So we walked the entire mall to get to Sears. Of course, my dad could not park near Sears. So we walked the whole mall, and all of a sudden, I see this place called the Dream Machine. And believe me, at this time, there wasn't many color video games out. These were not full color. These were black and white, very simplistic. You know, most of them were shoot the missile up to hit something on top of the screen. And then in 1981, started working for the very same arcade I'd seen that very first time. And continued learning and expanding my knowledge and how these games worked and how to repair them. Shortly thereafter, a year or two, I saw Dragon Quest. It was completely different from anything I'd ever seen in my life. I had seen it in Electronic Games Magazine before I'd actually played it and was like, is this a new movie coming out? There's no way that this could be a video game. Sure enough, a few months later, there it was. Unbelievable. I was shocked. Now, there was one off to the side that it had come out shortly before Dragon's Lair, and that was called Astron Belt. Another very good game, but played very differently. They had the flight portion of it was actually Laserdisc footage, that had been filmed in Japan, and the rest was superimposed graphics. It worked, but it was very different. Dragon's Lair, you felt like you were right there, involved in everything. Now, some time had gone by, and it was probably that fall, 1983, when I had seen the first image of Space Ace. Now, Space Ace took Dragon's Lair 10 steps farther. It wasn't as linear as Dragon's Lair. Although, Dragon's Lair really didn't feel linear. At the time, we'd never seen anything like it. So we didn't know what linear was at that time. At the time, I always felt like I was the movie editor. I was actually snipping the film together to see the outcome, just like a person in the audience. So it was vastly different than what people describe as linear, in my opinion. Now, I had seen Space Ace again in Electronic Games magazine. It was a single shot of Dexter holding a gun. And I was like, wow, this guy's kind of small. And it didn't really have a very big description. It just said that Don Bluth's next video game was going to be Space Ace. Well, I would say it was probably another few months later, by about March of 84, that I'd actually seen my first Space Ace, and it was in a Dream Machine, not the one I worked in, but it was actually at the mall at the opposite end of town, which was called the Duchess Mall. I worked at South Hills. Walked in, big crowd around the game, hooked immediately. I mean, the first thing you do with these laser games is you watch. Watching a game is quite fascinating in itself, because you want to see how far somebody can get, not just in score, but as games evolved and became more story-oriented, you wanted to see the ending, and sometimes you felt like, hey, I don't know if I can do that, so I'm going to watch somebody. And that's where a game like Space Ace really folds into that very well, because you are mesmerized. Now, this particular Space Ace had a monitor sitting on top of it. Now, a lot of them did back then. They would just put their video out, they would split it, and they would put it through a monitor and set the monitor right on top of the machine so that you didn't have to hover over the person playing and ruin the game. You could actually stand back 20 or 30 feet and watch. And most of the time, you didn't have a choice because there could be 40 kids around the machine, causing a fire hazard, of course, because nobody could get around. But I was hooked. I started playing that game. The first thing I noticed was the fact of being able to change character at one particular point in the game. It was just astounding because it took you in a different direction. You could change the game pattern every time you played. It was never the same game twice. Even after you played it many times, it still felt like it was exciting and challenging. That same game I bought a year later. It was, again, April 5th, 1985. I remember the asking price was $1,500. Now, most guys my age at that time were taking out loans to buy a car, not to buy a video game. But I went to the bank, got my $1,500 within a few days, and I was down at the arcade paying it off and got the receipt. And the very next day, me and a friend of mine, who was actually the manager that I worked with at Dream Machine, Steve Burt, we picked it up and put it in his van and took it home to my house and set it up in my bedroom. And it was amazing. We did some audio out from the speakers. I actually soldered in some wires to send the signal out to my stereo and put it in my auxiliary output. It was astounding. I mean, people were like, I was in the basement. People could hear this through the window that was closed, this little tiny window, and it projecting across the yard into the neighborhood, and they were like shocked. What is this thing? Oh my God, it's amazing. And it was just an amazing time in my life. And I owe that a lot to video games, but this moment in particular was because of this machine, Space Ace. It was unbelievable. Here in the Arcade Archives, we have lots of interesting arcade games and other forms of machinery, one of which is Protos 1. He actually runs the entire facility. I'm going to gain access to him so that he can give us the stats on Space Ace. We're going to head into the airlock right now. Hang on just a sec. Thank you. wow, this sure is a huge room for a computer. They don't make computers like this anymore either. Hang on, I got the password right here.
Kratos 1 powering up. Splice Systems. Copyright 1984. Request dropped. Please input request on keypad. Thank you. Accessing information. Information on Space Ace located. Would you like information read out loud or on a printout? Read out loud selected. Commencing request of information in readout mode in 3, 2, 1. Space Ace is a laserdisc video game produced by Don Bluth Studios, Cinematronics, and Advanced Microcomputer Systems, later renamed RDI Video Systems. It was unveiled in October 1983, just 4 months after the Dragon's Lair game, and released in spring 1984. Unlike its predecessor, featured film-quality animation, played back from a laserdisc. The gameplay is also similar, requiring the player to move the joystick or press the fire button at key moments in the animated sequences to govern the hero's actions. However, the game's action was more varied, with a player occasionally given the temporary option to either have the character he is controlling transform back into his adult form or remain as a boy, with different styles of challenges. Like Dragon's Lair, the gameplay of Space Ace requires the player to move the joystick in the right direction or press the fire button at the right moment to avoid the various hazards Dexter Ace faces. Space Ace introduced a few gameplay enhancements, most notably selectable skill levels and multiple paths through several of the scenes. At the start of the game, the player could select one of three skill levels: Cadet, Captain, or Ace, for easy, medium, and hard respectively. Only by choosing the toughest skill level could the player see all the sequences in the game. Only around half the scenes are played on the easiest setting. A number of the scenes had multiple choice moments when the player could choose how to act, sometimes by choosing which way to turn in a passageway or by choosing whether or not to react to the on-screen energize message and transform back into Ace. Most scenes also have separate reverse versions of each other. Dexter usually progresses through scenes by avoiding obstacles and enemies, but Ace goes on the offensive, attacking enemies rather than running away, although Dexter does occasionally have to use his pistol on enemies when it is necessary to advance. An example can be seen in the first scene of the game, when Dexter is escaping from Borg's robot drones. If the player presses the fire button at the right moment, Dexter transforms temporarily into Ace and can fight them, whereas if the player chooses to stay as Dexter, the robot's drill attacks must be dodged instead.
Hey, hold on a minute. Didn't you just get this off of Wikipedia? We could have read this off of Wikipedia.
That Wikipedia would be nothing without me. That bum owes me money. From playing online poker. Listen, if you don't need me anymore, I'm going offline.
Sorry, folks. Kratos has a tendency to get a little uppity. I mean, he is old after all. Anyway, let's get back to the game itself. I don't think we can go any farther without actually describing the story of the game of Space Ace. It really starts in the intro, where you meet Ace, who obviously is a futuristic cop of some sort, working for a galactic alliance, and his partner Kimberly. Now, obviously, there's some tension between the two of them, as you can tell, especially later in the game's storyline, after he rescues Kimberly, and he asks her on a date, and she basically turns him down. But anyway, going back a little bit,
they are after a criminal named Borf. Now, Borf is one of these atypical aliens that wants to take over the planet, but his conquering device is much different than anything you've probably ever seen before. His is called an Infanto Ray. For all intents and purposes, it turns everybody into babies. Now, this is probably the silliest takeover plan I've ever heard in my life. But that's why he has a character called Le Grin. Now, in Saturday Supercade, we find out that Le Grin is really his right arm. Le Grin does everything for Borf, and Borf just kind of concentrates on his domination of the planet Earth, and probably several planets besides that. We also find out that Borf is a geneticist, I guess, of some sort, because he has a place called the Dead Planet, where he's created various different kinds of creatures. We've got the Groots and the Carnicula plant and the Shag, which is just this ginormous Bigfoot looking thing that comes after Ace and or Dexter. Anyway, Ace is hit by this Infanto Ray, but instead of turning him into a baby, he is reduced to a 96-pound weakling named Dexter. We figure Dexter's probably in his mid to late teens. Sounds a lot like Jerry Lewis, and is extremely clumsy. Now, why did Ace not turn into a baby? There is some speculation. One of the write-ups that was done had indicated that Ace had been hit by some other kind of cosmic ray, and you know, you can kind of lead in to believe that maybe that's how he got his power to begin with. That maybe he was almost of superhero status. Obviously, he's extremely strong. Never really pursued in the Saturday Supercade series, which is unfortunate. I'd really love to have seen, you know, hey, is Ace, you know, stronger than most men? Can he, you know, lift and bend things? You know, almost like a Superman. But that's why he is only reduced half of his age. Maybe not even half of his age. Maybe Ace is mid-late 20s. But that's why he's only reduced to a teenager. Now, Dexter is a... It's almost like they're not the same person either. You wish you could have pulled more of the story out to find out if maybe Ace and Dexter were the same person. It was just a genetic change in size and shape. But was it really that Ace was Ace and Dexter was Dexter? They were two separate beings living in this same shell. Because Dexter was the exact opposite of what Ace was. Obviously in size and strength, but also in the storyline, you find out that Dexter doesn't like using his gun very much. Why? Because his gun is the same gun that Ace uses. I mean, obviously his clothes have been altered so that they change, but the gun is exactly the same, and it has quite a kick for Dexter. He can't really handle the gun, and most of the time misses everything he tries to shoot at. In fact, during the gameplay, at the end, you can actually do, I think it's 6 or 7 moves with Borf actually fighting him as Dexter, but there comes a moment where Borf is over your head and it is done. Either you turn to Ace or the game, well, it doesn't end, but you get killed at that point. Now, on to Kimberly. Really no backstory there. She's just the, you know, good-looking girl that kind of is the opposite of Ace, and you know, she seems, even though she dresses kind of provocatively, I guess, she's very straight-laced. You know, she's after this Borf character. Obviously, they are partners. We learn a little bit more in the Supercade series, which I'll go into detail later, that they have a you know, commissioner, I guess, Space Marshal Vaughn. He gives them their instructions where to go, what to do, how to do it, I guess, and then they just go and get the job done. Not a whole lot there. Obviously, after Ace is hit by the Infanto Ray, we are playing the game. We find out that Kimberly is actually kidnapped by Borf and taken away, and it's up to you to rescue her. But that's where the similarity to Dragon's Lair really ends, as far as the rescue the damsel in distress and you're the hero, blah, blah, blah. You know, this guy's after Earth, and he's on his way there, and you have to stop him. You have to prevent this from happening somehow, some way. And he has a lot of minions. I mean, you know, forget about everything that's on the dead planet. You also have, you know, this whole trash compactor scene with these baggies, which are these robots that basically have these tubes that shoot out plastic and form around garbage. And, you know, obviously he uses those against Ace at one point. And then there's these other three-eyed, almost like the carnicula plants, and they come up and try to eat him. And he is in control of the Masher, which is this gigantic pulverizing trash compactor with an added twist that it has a spike at the end of it. It's just this big, almost like nail that just keeps, you know, dropping down trying to crush him. And that's just one level. I mean, it goes on to, you know, the dead planet. He also has this device that can create a dark side, if you will, of yourself. And that's where we're introduced to Hexter. Now, it, again, had the TV show evolved, it would have been interesting to see Hexter and where his head was, you know, because he also can change, and he turns into what's called Evil Ace. Now, Evil Ace is ginormous. I mean, he is huge, and of course, during the game itself, he shoots himself apart, and, you know, I always said, what, you know, what kind of drugs were they on when they did this? I mean, it's insane what goes on there. But obviously, Borf is not a stupid alien. He knows how to get the job done, so to speak. But this whole Infanto Ray thing is almost like, okay, it doesn't make sense with everything else he's done, but okay, we're going to follow it. And again, when you're looking at the Supercade, you realize that Legrin is his henchman, that he basically cleans up the mess behind Borf, and he's responsible for taking care of anything, any loose ends or whatever. So I would assume that, you know, there's many Legrins, but this one is the right arm, and he looks slightly different than the rest in color. And he can basically assist Borf in whatever he needs. Long story short, he goes through all this stuff, motorcycle ride, and just this amazing game, and finally ends up at Borf's base, and here's the Infanto Ray pointed at Earth, and they have this battle. Well, of course, like I said, you can only go so far as Dexter. You have to energize his ace, and once you do, it's a free-for-all. He just starts beating the snot out of Borf as much as he can. Of course, Borf is much larger than Ace. Not depicted the same way in Saturday Supercade. You know, he's slightly bigger, but when you're playing the video game, you know, I'd say Ace is 6-something. Borf is at least 9 foot tall, maybe a little bit taller. And, you know, he distracts him long enough to run around, finds these series of solar mirrors, I guess, and deflects the beam back at Borf, which then turns Borf into a baby. Now, I know in the comic book series, they had kind of explored the fact that Borf as a baby is a new person. Again, like Ace, where Ace becoming Dexter was a different person. Borf as a baby is not a mean baby. He actually likes Ace. Calls him by his name, because, of course, we find out in the game that his name really is Dexter. And he doesn't like being called that. When he is Ace, he is Ace. And Borf, as a baby, calls him Ace. And you find out that, you know, they take care of baby Borf, and until his brother shows up and changes him back. I would have liked to have seen Borf's family. Now, they depicted Borf's brother as, I guess, a twin, because he looked just like him. And that was kind of confusing, because you had to look at the clothing to see which one was who. I always felt that there should have been a different color for every brother that he had. I always felt that, like, there'd be a red brother and a green brother, and Borf is blue, and, you know, maybe an orange one. And, you know, I had drawn them because I was passionate about drawing at that time, and I drew Borf and his brothers, and I had, like, the red one was like the one with the hair trigger temper, and he was the smallest of the group, and that's why he had these issues. It's a very fascinating story, and I wish that somebody else would pick it up. They did do a comic book series, and I can't remember how many issues that had been done. It was very fascinating, because you get to see Ace actually age to an old man, and they have to save his life because the Infanto beam and the cosmic rays have basically poisoned him, and he gets hit again, and it actually changes him into an old man, and then he gets to change back into Ace from an old man's point of view. So it's a very different story there as well, but it would have been nice to see it followed through a little bit more. And again, I always thought the Saturday Supercade version actually touched base on a lot of the questions that people had, And at that point, it was really interesting because the game had literally come out the year before. So it was fresh in your mind, and you were, you know, ready to kind of explore that whole universe they'd come up with. But the comic book series came out in 2002 or 2003. So by then, these ideas were stale, you know, in your head. You couldn't remember a lot of it until you went back and either watched the Supercade series and then the game, or vice versa, to get a feeling of what was going on and follow it again. So I'm hoping that, you know, I know that Don Bluth has Dragon's Lair in the wings. He's really trying to make it a feature film. I think it would be a severe injustice if Space Ace isn't made into a film, because I think Space Ace has a much better story in the aspect that it's completely new and original, as opposed to, don't get me wrong, I love Dragon's Lair, but Dragon's Lair is the atypical rescue, the princess, you know, the whole thing, and it's been done a million times, whereas Space Ace is kind of this Flash Gordon, yet, it, you know, with the changing back and forth element, you got all these little things going on. He's in love with Kimberly, obviously wants to date her, but she doesn't want to, and of course being out in outer space and dealing with these aliens. Saturday Supercade touched base on a lot of interesting things, and I wish that they would go back, look at all this, and really come up with a good storyline. Now, I also think we need to touch base on probably the biggest asset that Space Ace has, and that's its thundering music. This music was composed by Christopher Stone, who had also done all the little intros and outros for Dragon's Lair. He's gone on to have a very successful career in his own right, but worked with Don Bluth back in the early 80s. And this soundtrack is just, in one word, phenomenal. It really brings the animation and the action together. It's an orchestra going on at once. And I'd like to listen to a piece of that right now.
Space Ace, defender of justice, truth, and the planet Earth. Ace is being attacked by the evil Commander Borg.
Hold your fire!
Is that creep?
Borg! Earthlings must surrender to me.
No way, Borg, old buddy.
Oh! Ah, I've been hit!
By the Infanto Ray.
Earthlings must surrender to me.
Struggle with Dexter to regain his manhood. Destroy the Infanto Ray. Defeat the evil Borg.
Hey, Borg! Come on, Kimberly, let's go. I've been hit.
Be valiant, space warrior. The fate of Earth is in.
Now I would like to listen to the Saturday Supercade version of the song. You're going to notice, like, a really similar feel to it, and they also tried to get the similar voice actor involved. Different. Yeah, it's really, really good. I think they did an excellent job on this song. Check this out.
Space Ace, defender of the galaxy. Together with his partner Kimberly, they battle the forces of the evil Borg, who seeks to conquer Earth with his dreaded Infanto Ray.
And with that, I think we should start talking a little bit about the Saturday Supercade version of Space Ace. Okay, a little bit about Ruby Spears. Of course, they worked for Hanna-Barbera back in the late 60s through the mid-70s, doing shows like Scooby-Doo, which they were the originators, Jabberjaw, Funky Phantom. They did a lot of the early to mid-70s Hanna-Barbera, Oh, There's a Ghost, and We Have a Strange Animal, and a bunch of teenagers let's run around like maniacs shows that were out of the time, and everybody loved them, including me. But then by 1977, they decided to form their own company, Ruby Spears Incorporated, and they did shows like Fang Face, which again was another, hey, we have a creepy monster, but we have our own creepy monster, and a bunch of teenagers let's run after them. Very good. Of course, the excellent Thundar the Barbarian. By the early 80s, they were kind of folding into what everybody else was doing, which was marketing, basically, just like He-Man and a few of the other shows that were out at the time. They decided, though, to go the route that Hanna-Barbera did and get licensed arcade characters. Now, Hanna-Barbera, of course, did Pac-Man. Well, they did the rest. They did Saturday Supercade, which is like the holy grail
video game television shows. Of course, sadly, never released on DVD to this day. Warner Archive keeps promising us for the last year that it will be released, but they're working on some licensing issues. Personally, I think it's between Nintendo and what's left of Gottlieb. I think Paramount Pictures still owns the rights to Qbert. But they did an excellent version of Space Ace for the 1984-85 season of Saturday Supercade, which, of course, was the last season the show aired. The differences between the show and the game are quite staggering. Why? Well, it's a television show, and you got to fill in time. Secondly, it's a children's television show. They did not want to depict Space Ace as Kimberly's would-be boyfriend. They decided that Dexter would be her brother. And it added a different dynamic to the show. Of course, he still got hit by the Infanto Ray and shrunk down to Dexter. Nobody else knew but her. It just seemed like Ace disappeared and Dexter appeared whenever something went wrong. Excellent show, though. I thought that the animation, given limited animation as it is, was done very well. They tried to keep with the characters' designs as closely as they could. And what I thought was fascinating, incorporating new characters into that format, which is very difficult to do. Just a really, really good show. And if you have a chance, there's a few websites out there that do actually have those shows online. Please watch them. I think you'll enjoy them. What impact did laser games, including Space Ace, have on the game Crash itself? Well, they were supposed to be the great phoenix rising from the ashes. The Crash really started in late 82, early 83. That's when the industry itself started noticing there was too many games in the market, and too many of them were poor rip-offs of everything else that was out. It was either a Pac-Man clone, or a Space Invaders clone, or a Galaga clone. So when Dragon's Lair comes out and all these other laser games, it was supposed to be the big boost that the industry needed to keep these arcades going and keep the money coming in. By then, there were so many games on the market that people were buying, they stopped buying. On top of the fact that the laser games were usually a bit more, usually by about $500 or $600, and their failure rate was extremely high, given the fact that kids would kick the side of the cabinet, cause the machine to skip. And also, if maintenance wasn't provided on the machine at regular intervals, like you would normally clean the disc out once a week, twice if you were in a highly populated arcade, the game would really start to fail. That in itself really caused a great majority of the crash that came about, because you had lackluster games, you had these great games that took a lot of maintenance and were too expensive. So your small arcade owners weren't buying anymore. The large ones still were. And that's why, you know, people like me who had large arcades, you know, Dream Machine, Goldmine, Tilt, Timeout, we didn't feel the effects until at least late 84, early 85, because we were still playing games. As far as home versions, there were dozens. Primarily, the game came out on computers, obviously, because of the format itself. It lent itself a little easier. We're not going to see a Space Ace game on the 2600. Although there was, you know, of course, the amazing Dragon Slayer port for ColecoVision. Sadly, there was no Space Ace port, simply because of the crash. There was so many different copies for IBM, the Atari ST series, Amiga. The list goes on and on. Now, most of the early versions had no sound. That there was absolutely no sound at all. Later versions, of course, you had Boris Revenge, where they actually took a good portion of the game and reformatted it so that it included sound, a little bit better picture. It wasn't until 93 when we really started seeing video compression, and the birth of the full motion video game was introduced at that point. Dragon's Lair and, of course, Space Ace were not forgotten. There were excellent ports. The first one I remember was on the Sega CD. Very grainy, but still very playable. I actually had the 3DO version, which was phenomenal for its time. After that, the next version I played was on the PC. There was a Dragon's Lair combo pack that came out in 98. The video compression was very good by then. The MPEG format had really taken over. The game played really well. After that, I don't remember playing the game until I got the version for the Wii. Now, the version for the Wii was really done well. Up until that point, we had the DVD versions. They weren't playable at all. Basically, accessing information on a DVD, it wasn't fast enough, so you couldn't react to the game, but you could watch it. It was pretty cool, and the information on it was really nice as well. But the first real playable version had to have been for the Wii. It came out last fall. Of course, I picked it up, and it was the Dragon's Lair 3-pack. Very, very nice edition. It plays just like the arcade. The reaction time is actually too good because there is no blankouts. Blankouts basically are when the screen blanks out after every move, but it would be for just a couple of seconds and it accesses the next portion of the animation, whether it's continuing on or dying. And on the Wii version, none of that whatsoever. The game just kept on moving. Absolutely amazing port. Now, as far as information is concerned, if I had to pick one that was really good, it would have to be the Dragon's Lair 3-pack that came out 20th anniversary 2003. The Dragon's Lair disc had just a wealth of information, including a Starcade episode featuring Dragon's Lair. There wasn't very much information on the Space Ace, but the video compression had been beefed up a little bit by then, and you could watch it. You still couldn't play it, though. The DVD versions were pretty weak in gameplay. What's next for me in the game I loved as a teenager? Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot. I still play my version on the Wii quite often, and like I said, it's an excellent port and plays very well. But you're sitting in front of a TV. Although, seeing it on a flat screen is nothing short of amazing. No, I want my own machine. And unfortunately, they're hard to come by. Sadly, I sold mine in 1988. I had it for 3 years. Yeah, close to three and a half years. And moved down to Florida from New York. Obviously didn't want to take it with me. I had a bunch of games at that point. I had Space Ace. I did have a Dragon's Lair. I had a Super Don Quixote. I also had a Thayer's Quest. Astro Blaster. I wanted an Astro Fighter. I couldn't find one. I had a Missile Command. I had a Cloak and Dagger that was actually converted from a Defender. So I had a good wealth of games at that point. I had a Rally X. Another one of my favorites. But now, I've turned 45, and, I've been collecting for a long time. I have pretty close to 25 machines. I want a Space Ace again. Well, I'm going to go a step further. I'm going to say this off the bat. I do not like emulators at all. I feel that it's the same thing as sitting in front of your TV. You're not in front of the game. It makes a big difference. Well, I'm going to break down and build an emulator cabinet. I got into Daphne last year. What I mean by Daphne, I mean the Daphne emulator. It plays 16 or 17 classic Laserdisc arcade games, everything from Mach 3 and Us vs. Them to Esch's Amarilla, I think is the way it's pronounced, which, by the way, I finished, and it's a pretty decent game. Dragon's Lair and its, Brood 2 and Space Ace. So it has a good selection of games. So I've decided that I'm going to build my own cabinet, and I've called it Laser Cave. Now here's the intro for Laser Cave.
Laser Cave, the first arcade-based Laserdisc system. Play any one of 16 Laser Classic arcade games as you remember them. Games like Dragon's Lair, Dragon's Lair 2, Space Ace, Thayer's Quest, Mach 3, Us vs. Them, Super Don Quixote, and many more. Laser Cave by Splice System. It's like playing in the past, right now.
And that's the intro to Laser Cave. Now, the music is much longer, of course. I think I've got the music playing at about 7 minutes, and then it loops back around again. I'm using Mala as my front end of choice, and I think I've got a really good look to it, and it actually displays video, small pieces of video of each one. Most of them are intros, and it will show a flyer with some history where I've kind of augmented them and given you some facts about the game. Please feel free to stay on the site, and I will post progress on this cabinet as I'm putting it together. We are just about at a point where I can put an external hard drive together, and because they do use CHD files and they're very large. So, stay on the site and keep afloat of the progress. I think you're going to find it quite fascinating. One more thing I wanted to mention before I end this episode is where you can watch the episodes of Saturday Supercade, as well as the Dragon's Lair episodes that were on ABC. Two locations, actually. DragonsLairFans.com, a site done by Darth Nuno. He seems to be out of Belgium or the Netherlands. I've been following his site for many years. There's a lot of great information. He also collects, but he has full episodes of both Dragon's Lair and Space Ace there. Also, there's another site. It's called ArcadeSupercade.com, and not only does it have Dragon's Lair and Space Ace, but it has episodes of Donkey Kong, Frogger, Q-Bert, Kangaroo. I think he has an episode of Pitfall on there as well, and he seems to be doing some restoration work on some of these episodes. They look a lot better, more crisp, more detail, and a lot more color. So please, check those two sites out, and I think you're going to be very, very happy when you do. Well, gang, we've come to the end of the first episode of the Arcade Archives Space Ace. I'd like to thank everybody who was involved in the making of this episode. That would be Space Ace, Kimberly, Dexter, Space Marshal Vaughn, Orb, Legrin, the Groots.
Hey, what about me? I mean, I did help and all.
Oh, and how can I forget my partner in crime, Proto Swan?
Thank you. I feel so warm and squishy now. Respect. I'm finally getting respect.
Well, folks, looks like Proto blew a fuse again. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and keep playing like it's 1981. Bye now.